My pleasure now to introduce Trish Jansen. Trish is a project consultant with the Community Services and Health Industry Skills Council, and she has been working in the area as a project consultant and workshop facilitator since 2002. Trish comes with a very high level working knowledge of the vocational education and training sector from local, national and international perspectives, gained from 16 years demonstrated experience in both vet and adult education. I'd like to welcome Trish to the Institute, and Trish will be running a workshop for the next hour and a half. Welcome, Trish.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much for having me here today. And thanks for the very nice introduction. I also work for TAFE, so I understand a lot of the issues associated with the paperwork and the audit trail and some of the challenges that you face as teachers. I teach the TAA 04, Certificate 4 in Assessment and Workplace Training, and I have done the BSC for the last 4 years or so at Brookvale College. Most of my work is around recognition, and I work across community services and health, and I also work across finance with the Commonwealth Bank in looking at upskilling their managers, and we've just done a major project with all of their bank managers with a couple of qualifications via recognition, and it was a simple process. I'm probably going to kill. Can everyone hear me? Is this not... I don't think this... Yeah, it's working. Oh, I have to look right into it. Okay. Thank you. That any better? No. Is that any better? Yeah? Okay. I'm going to try not to do so much as a PowerPoint by deaf here this morning. So you've got a couple of things in your folder which you might... want to refer to as I'm talking this morning, as well as the PowerPoint. I've put together some notes around recognition and best practice, and I will refer to that also throughout the presentation. I'm happy to take questions at the end, or if you've got a burning one and you need to have it addressed right there and then, please ask it. And I'm not precious, all right? So there are some wonderful things about recognition, but there are also some painful things that we have to come to terms with moving forward. So who's driving this? Any ideas? Government? You would be right. Okay, this is our Mr. Hargrave statement. It is through collaboration with industry, business and all levels of government that we will change the perceptions of vocational and technical education and its delivery and produce the skilled workers that Australia needs to keep our economy competitive both nationally and internationally. So why? Okay, we have an ageing population. You would have seen numerous articles on what the workforce is going to look like in many of the industries in 5 to 10 years. Community services and health is facing a massive shortage of workers. Skill shortages, so people currently are in jobs at the moment who will need upskilling in order to face the challenges of technology, more material and work going offshore and finding more work that is meaningful here in this country. Cost effectiveness of VET. Our current minister has a poor view of VET, unfortunately. And I'm not sure whether that's just poor advice he's getting or he has some actually runs on the board. I think VET itself has done some amazing movement in the 15, 16 years I've been working in the VET system. We still need to make some changes, and it's a work in progress VET. And I suppose the bottom line is what I'm going to talk about today. So addressing a cumbersome system,
that discourages the recognition of a learner's skills and knowledge. You will have all been in the position where you have said it's easier to undertake this qualification. That would be some of the reasons for that is time poor. Some of the reasons for that is sometimes we have a view, if I haven't taught it, you don't know it. Some of that's our own stuff and our own baggage. Some of it is to do with how in the hell am I going to try and address the learning gap for this learner when I have 22 other students in the classroom. And I've already done my work plan. I have already got my material ready. And I don't have time to change it. So what are the benefits of recognition? They don't need to undertake unnecessary training to gain a qualification. Their work and life skills will be recognised, thus improving their employment prospects. Again, our minister has stated that. That's what he thinks recognition will do. I think we need to be really clear here. This is not just about government. Industry has been vocal in its criticism of recognition, its criticism of workers having to attend training and coming back to the workplace and saying that was a waste of time. I already knew this stuff. So there is some of that, and that's not been screamed from the rooftops, but it is an issue that we need to think about. For individuals, why recognition? It gives them the ability to have their own skills and knowledge validated. That is a very good thing for learners. It's very motivating to be able to say, yep, you're there, and you can move up. Rather than saying, I'm not interested, you need to stay where you are. For industry, it addresses a learning culture. Industry has a huge amount of responsibility to train its workers. It cannot expect the public provider and the private providers to do that job for them. What they're looking for is gap training. What they're looking for is being the ability to upskill their workers, to be able to have someone come in and say, this is what we can do, rather than say, this is our timetable, these are the classes, this is what you must do, and it's called flexibility. It needs to be cost-effective recognition. And cost-effective in a way that doesn't mean that a teacher or a facilitator has to spend days and days going through a portfolio of evidence. Unions like recognition because it allows their workers to move up pay scales. And in lots of councils, that's how it's done. When you get to this certain level, you get the pay rise. You have to be able to prove that you're competent. And most importantly, why is it important for you? It gives institutes the ability to deploy the limited resources that they have. It gives you the opportunity to move into new markets, expand your business. You are a business. As much as you are an education facility, you are a business. And at the end of the day, there is a bottom line that says, am I in the black or am I in the red? It allows you to encourage learners to turn up when they know that there is going to be someone that is going to help them. It gives you a much better outcome for retention. If you have a look at the stats that NCVR have put together for the 2004-2005, in some areas we had a 17% completion rate across New South Wales. Now, the reasons for that were many. One of the reasons was that people left because they were unmotivated, they didn't see that they were going anywhere, and it wasn't giving them what they wanted. Now, you're never going to make everybody happy. You know, there's no wish list here. But a 17% across New South Wales, we need to look at why that happens. Gives you access to new economy areas, new markets that perhaps TAFE hasn't been into before. And I suppose for me, and this is where my passion arises from, is a learner-centred approach. So what does the government want? The government wants lifelong learning. It wants to encourage individual and enterprises' investment in training. It wants a skilled workforce. It wants increased international competitiveness. It wants increased social capital and social inclusiveness, which means learning for everybody. Under the AQTF, you are mandated to meet the requirements of standards 7, 8 and 9, and I'm not going to unpack those standards. These are some of the key points that are included in when you are audited for compliance against the standards 7, 8 and 9, which are around learners. Okay, so the key outcomes required in the future are that you are going to be able to be benchmarked against whether or not you support recognition in your practices, whether it is provided up front, whether it's learner-centred, whether there are individual learning plans rather than one-size-fits-all. And most importantly, it does require you to have a relationship, establish a relationship with learners and maintain that relationship. Now that's what you will be benchmarked against in the coming years. So, million-dollar question. If it's a requirement of the AQTF, if industry states that it's imperative, if government states it's a better outcome, and if vet providers such as institutes can see the benefits, I'll let you answer that question. Howard went through a whole range of challenges that you face. All true? All true. I brought along a book today, which is part of the Green Esky. Has everybody seen this book? It should be really your Bible, because this was written 6 years ago, and it is still as valid as when it was 6 years ago. And yet there are terms in here that people say they've never heard of, and I think, I mean, I use this as a Bible because I think it has some wonderful innovative ways to do recognition. So if you haven't got it, I think you can get it free off DEF's website. You can download it. It's number 4, the kit to support assessor training, and it deals very well with recognition. So, what does recognition, and I'm going to refer to RPL as recognition, not recognition of prior learning, not recognition of current competencies, one word, recognition. It encompasses, it's the umbrella that sits above credit transfers, national recognition, advanced standing, recognition by assessment. You're all very quiet. So, recognition by assessment. On the basis of competencies or learning outcomes obtained by a learner through previous training, past work experience and current work or life experience. That encompasses recognition of current competencies and recognition of prior learning. It's probably easier for learners to understand the term recognition than to be using acronyms. RPL, not people don't understand what it is. If you start to use one word, maybe we'll get somewhere. When you start to use acronyms, learners don't need to know what it all means. They don't need to unpack the terms. Use the one word. What am I recognising here? I am recognising skills and knowledge and attitude, and we need to make sure we don't leave that last word out. It used to be called both, but if you read the Green Book, you'll see that in 2000, the year 2000, it was suggested that we use the one term. And I didn't make this up, you see. Now I've been challenged so many times, I put the page number up there, you see. Somebody said it was my idea, and I wish it was, but it wasn't. I'm going to flick through some of these. I was talking before about learners having their skills and knowledge validated. You know yourself, when someone says to you, oh, you already know that, or oh, you're already there, or, you know, it makes you feel good. When somebody talks to you like you're stupid, learners do not come in as a blank slate. They don't come in empty. No one comes in empty. Regardless of what they've done in their past, they will come in with knowledge and skills around many of the areas of the competencies that are contained within training packages. And I think that it's insulting to suggest that they don't. We all, and I, you know, I will tell you now, going through a recognition process for the TAA qualification, I have to tell you, it was the most painful experience of my life. One, I don't want to repeat. Through TAFE, as a TAFE teacher, and I felt that in a panel interview that I wasn't believed, that I was making it up, I didn't have a piece of paper, that each piece of performance criteria contained across the qualification, and halfway through I wanted to leave. I've never had such, you can see I'm not over it yet, of course, I'm still debriefing. I wanted to leave and think, oh, you people are stupid. You don't know, you don't understand anything I've given you here. And the truth was, they didn't understand what I did. They didn't have a clue what I did. A learning and development consultant, what does that look like? Haven't got a clue. Did they take the time to find out? That would be a knot. Okay? That would be a knot. Now, 3 hours later, I walked out of there feeling like I was stupid, had no self-esteem. I rang my head teacher and said, you can shove this job because I don't want to work for you people. This has been the most painful experience of my life. Now, why was that? Any ideas? Did I take in 3 boxes of evidence? Yep. Did it take me 6 weeks to put that evidence through? Yep. Did I have a degree and a post-grad degree? Yep. Did I have the old Cert 4 and the diploma? Yep. Had I worked in vocational education and training for 17 years? Had I written papers? Yep. Had I written the book using training packages, the HR tool? Yep. And I was rejected. Insufficient evidence in working with training packages. Now, I'll just give you a little tip here. I'll tell you what this was about. This was about power. This was about someone saying to me, I had to suffer to get mine, and by God, you're going to suffer to get yours. Now, I'll tell you the truth, that happens. That happens all the time, where we think we haven't taught it, they don't know it, I have to struggle, learning is a punishment, this is not easy, you're not just going to get this qual. I have to tell you, recognition is not something you do to people or you give to people. The give and the do need to go out of your speak. It is about recognising and validating someone else's skills and knowledge, and your ability is to be able to visualise competence. Now, I left that revolving panel interview and wrote a 17-page letter of complaint. And yes, I got my Cert 4. And it's sitting up there on my wall. And I take much pleasure in looking at it because I think it was harder to get than my degree and my post-grad degree. I did more work for that Cert 4 than what I ever did in a graduate diploma in adult education, which I got honours in. Did they even look at that? That would be a knot. So again, it will come down to your own perception. Assessment, recognition isn't just another form of assessment. It's not anything different. It shouldn't sit outside. It shouldn't sit over here. And then you've got workplace assessment, observation, third party. And oh, hang on a minute. got recognition. It's not out there. It belongs with everything else. It's assessment. And it's around the assessment methodology that you use that is the key. Don't punish people. Don't make them produce war and peace. I want to write something here. I'm getting very passionate now. This is what I do, you see? Because I don't find it. I find it really difficult to manage the struggle of all of the challenges, and we all have them. But it really comes down to being able to visualise competence. What does that look like in the workplace? It isn't about giving learners a module outcome or a set of units and saying, help yourself, off you go, it's all yours. Learners don't need to know about the VET system. That's our stuff. At a Certificate 3 level, you are looking at a learner who participates. So you can see it. It's easy to see. If you listen to a learner's story, it's easy to visualise the competence. At a Cert 4, you are looking for a learner who does some coordination in their job role. Or they do, they might lead a team. So they might be a team leader. At a diploma level, you're looking for someone in their job who manages. At an operational level. At an advanced diploma, I'm looking for someone who in their job role, and a majority of their job role, they are strategic. So they do a lot of the big picture rather than the on the ground. That's a very simple analogy of the AQTF system. So when someone comes to you and says that I work as a team leader, automatically you'd be looking at Cert 4. You know, that's what level they're at. You don't need to unpack any further than that. Is everyone still with me? If I left you behind, tell me if I have.
Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Yesterday, at Sydney Institute, we posted Reframing the Future, Recognition Done Well. And there were 70 people at that workshop. And the overriding sense that I got from it was about just what Tricia said. It's not ticking boxes, but it's actually taking the time to listen to a student's story about what they have done and identifying from that story and forming a relationship with the person. And from that, you can make visual...
can start to see what it looks like. If you don't listen to the story, and if you don't, and I can't tell you how to run your system because I work within that system, and I know I'm a part-time teacher. I start at 6 on a Monday night and I finish at 9. I don't ever see anybody, but somehow, you know, you've got to do it.
So my question is, earlier in your presentation, you said that it has to be cost-effective. How can we do that and still offer cost-effective recognition?
Good question. Some of the models that I've seen throughout TAFE is that we might have 3 or 4 teachers teaching one qualification, and they may be teaching certain modules or units of competency out of those quals. Often what I've seen is that there's been a huge duplication of knowledge. When we look at units of competence, if you go to the essential knowledge, and I'll show you in a minute, you will see that across many of the compulsory units, which to do with organisations, are the same. Knowledge of OH&S, knowledge of the industry, able to work in a team, utilise the specialist communication skills. Now, if somebody within TAFE undertook a mapping exercise, I will tell you now, your duplication. How many students have told me how many times they've done communication? Thousands. How many times have they done conflict negotiation in one course? 10 times. How many times have they been assessed? 10 times. You can't operate in an insular vacuum. Somehow we have to look at a system that allows us to deliver generic material. The context in the job role will be different, but some of the most basic things that we need to teach around communication skills, occupational health and safety, but with some specialist areas, working in teams, are the same. At a Cert 3 level, they're the same at a Cert 4. So often people come in to TAFE with already those skills, already evidence, and we don't listen to their story because we don't. If we could reduce the amount of time that we duplicate teaching, then I think we can get a cost-effective system, because we have teachers that are able to sit with students. Currently we don't. No one has time. You know, you get into a classroom and you get there. I get there at 5:30 and I shut the door. Why do I do that? Any idea why I shut the door at 5:30? Because I don't want anyone to come in. I want to get all my stuff ready. You know, the minute a student comes in, I'm gone. Like, and all of a sudden I know it's 6:05 and God, you know, I'm running late. At 9 o'clock, often I'm there till 10. Because a student will, a couple of students will come up and whatever. So we know we are time poor and we're tired. I don't think that's a bad thing to say, we are tired. We're now, you know, more than halfway through the year and we're all tired. We do an enormous amount of work, and please, let's not beat ourselves up too much about this, because we do. I think one of the issues with us as assessors and as professionals is that we don't actually validate our own skills and knowledge. We are a bit scared to make decisions in case it comes back and bites us. Sometimes we don't have anyone else to speak to, so sometimes it's think, well, you know, will I do that? Oh, maybe I will, maybe I won't. I've got a great head teacher who I can contact all the time. And we often run validation sessions. And what often happens is that I'm telling her she's over-assessing. Oh, no, you don't need to do that. And we do a lot of professional development, but that happens by osmosis. It doesn't happen. It's not an organised thing. So maybe we need to set up some organised systems where teachers can get together and share their knowledge and share their knowledge of industry. One of the keys about recognition is actually knowing what the job looks like. I have to start with that and finish with that. If you have no idea what the actual job looks like that you're teaching, and just remember, training packages are a direct correlation with job roles. Wasn't by accident. I'll just tell you how we, at the Skills Council, how we develop training packages. We go out to industry and I watch. I follow people around. I write what they do. Then I get their job role and I map it. And then we develop the competencies. We don't develop qualifications outside of industry. And we don't sign off. We might be the facilitators that do all the work, but industry tells us whether we've got it right or not. And industry will say, no, that's not right. Okay? We go back again. So the qualifications held within training packages are not developed as qualifications as we may have thought of in the old system. They are directly job roles. So if I'm teaching a Cert 4 in disabilities, that's a support worker's job. Do I know that job role? Absolutely. I've unpacked every job role in community services and most of health. I don't actually need to work in that, but I need to know what does that job role look like. I get onto the net and download job roles every single day. Oh, new job role. When we do a review of a training package, why do we do a review? Any idea? Up the back there? Absolutely. The job roles changed. We lost something like 50 qualifications in the last review of CHCO2 because there were no vocational outcome, no job roles. So qualifications are designed to have a vet outcome. So either for people in the job to be validated and recognised, or people wanting to work in that field. Does everybody understand that? I mean, training packages are a bit of a myth because we were told about 6 years ago that they were going to go. Well, they're still here and they're not going anywhere. And we have, I mean, finally now we're going to be using units. And using modules was another area that we got confused about. By having a sheet of paper that just told us the learning outcome wasn't helpful at the end of the day, because it didn't allow us to have a look at what the essential knowledge was, so therefore be able to ask the right questions. So, as I said, don't beat yourselves up that you haven't done it well or you're not able to do it well. A lot of it was systems in place that probably were okay 6 or 8 years ago, but we've now moved into an area where the government is beating us up with a stick, you know, telling us we're not, you know, not we're more reactive than proactive. But I have to tell you something about industry. Industry is much more happier to get a learner with a qualification that has a TAFE logo on it than anywhere else. So as much as you might be maligned out there, you have huge credibility. Often employers will say, children's services, I'll tell you now, they only want students from TAFE. They're not interested in taking them from the private RTOs. Now some of that, you know, there are some other reasons for that, but what they say is that I know that they get solid teaching. Now you can say that about a lot of your industry. So yes, you have huge credibility out there. An industry, as I said, much more happy to have a certificate with a TAFE logo on it, because they know you've been around for a long time. We've got RTOs that will come and go, and they'll hopefully go. Some of them do very well in the private enterprise. So I think I went off track there, but anyway. You've all got this anyway, don't you? Know this stuff. I'm just going to reinforce a few things. Recognition is the same as assessment. You have to know the job role. In order to do recognition, you have to be able to visualise what the competencies look like. How are you going to do that? Come on, someone at the back. Sorry, Howard? Yep, so I'm a student and I rock up to do a certificate for in aged care work. Okay? I'm working in aged care, have my Cert 3, currently working as a team leader. What's the first thing as a facilitator or teacher are you going to ask for? Thank you. Position description, performance review. They are two of the most valuable workplace documents you can ever see. When you think that we developed up the competencies from the performance reviews, that's how we do it. We look at what is the standard within industry, what is the standard within this job. What does industry give us? It gives us the performance review and it gives us the job role. And we then develop up, okay, this is the standard. We work out that if the learner is participating, then it's an AQF level 3. If most of their job role is coordinating, we know straight off it's a Cert 4. If they're managing, if the word management is through their job role and through their performance review, we know it's diploma. So those two documents are really the only two pieces of paper that are absolutely necessary for you to undertake recognition. The rest of it, let me just kill another myth. You do not drill down to performance criteria. You do not assess element by element. Job roles are designed around the core competencies, which are the things or the knowledge and skills that a learner has to have to be able to work in that industry. So knowledge of, experience in. The specialist skills are your electives. We need to look at the broad range of a learner's skills and knowledge. Drilling down to performance criteria is not required. I didn't write that. It is in here, in the Bible. One of the things that we do straight off when we look at someone's job role is that we map it. What would we be mapping it to? Come on. You know this. We would be mapping the job role to the competencies. Now, often people say, oh, I don't know how to map. There is a trick to it. You know, it's not something that comes easy, but the more you do it, the easier it is. I can do it in my sleep. I can look at a job role and tell you what are the competencies. But I've been doing that for a long time. We haven't been doing it in TAFE. One, because we often didn't see the whole units. So we didn't see units of competency. We've seen a learning outcome. Now we're going to see the units, are we? Fully? Yes? Units have been changed as from 2007 or 2006 actually. All training package revisions, anything that's been revised or fixed, the essential knowledge will be coming straight after the elements and the performance criteria. No longer will it be at the back. Why is that? Exactly. The other thing is that it gives you, as teachers, a very clear outline of what you've got to teach. It says, here's the essential knowledge that you have to cover. How much? You work that out when you get your nominal hours. It says 40 hours to teach. Often you think 40 hours too much. You'll get another unit and you'll say, I need 60 hours to teach that. I'll give you a little tip here. Often what we do, as the longer we are in VET, the more knowledge we get, and then all of a sudden we think the learner has to have all of that. Oh, but they've got to know this, and but they've got to know that. No, no, I've got to teach them this, it's really important. Who says it's important? If it's not contained within the essential knowledge, it's a nice to have. Your essential knowledge is your must. Should are the contexts that arise within that job, and that's your risk area. The nice to know, you don't have time. You don't have time. We over-deliver and we over-assess. Sorry, but we don't. Why do we do that? Because we don't have a lot of faith in our own ability as assessors. Our own professional judgment, you should have. You should be sitting here validating who you are and what you do. Because you're not here by accident. You do an amazing job. We wouldn't have an industry out there that says, I want a TAFE certificate if you didn't. Yeah, sure, you get bagged. That's always going to happen. But, you know, 80% of the time, you're delivering what industry wants, but you over-deliver and you over-assess. And they're the two things that can say, one, are cost effective, because you can have time to spend with a learner. You have to develop that relationship. Recognition is not one size fits all. You cannot expect to walk into a class and say, okay, now do recognition. You have to find out who these people are. That means talking to them. So, do you do that in enrolment? That's a system change. The AQTF is going to demand that you do it up front. You're not going to have a choice. You have to be able to show that you've done it up front. Often many TAFE teachers that I know do recognition really, really well, but they go around the system and they fast track people. And we have done it really well. That's not going to work when we have to have some sort of overall framework that says this is how we're going to do it. So, best practice recognition. This is your stuff. You need to be able to understand and unpack the job role. You need to be able to map it. Learners often don't know what they don't know. They don't know what qual. Some of those learners will need to have face-to-face, undertake the whole qualification. Recognition is maybe not for them. And not everybody wants it. Often I've had learners say, oh no, I really enjoy the class. Don't give me recognition, I want to come, I like this. We've done a project at Warringah Council with, I don't know how many of their workers, probably 50. doing frontline, Cert 4 and diploma. And I did a 3-hour interview with each of, well, about 10 of them a couple of weeks ago. And 7 of them, I said, look, you're there. It's beautiful. You need no more evidence. 7 of them said, but I've really enjoyed it. I really want to keep coming. Okay.
What did the council say?
What we said to the council was that all of the people, those 7 people, wanted to learn more about managing people. That they felt their skill deficiency. So even though it was outside, what the council said was yes. Because it's going to help their business. And they recognised in the performance reviews, when we looked at them, every one of them said needs to be more flexible, needs. And even though it was outside of the essential knowledge and skills of the unit, we said, yeah, okay, let's do this. So there are ways to, and is that industry happy? Very happy. Very, very happy that, one, they met all of the core, and now we're doing added value by taking their, and some of the people within the council weren't managing or supervising people, and there are positions going in the next year. Those people want to upskill, they want to know that they can apply for those jobs. So we've met a skill gap within the council. Because they actually said to me, oh, we would probably have advertised for new positions, and now they're thinking maybe we don't need to. Maybe in 12 months we'll have these people here, and it'll be the lower level jobs which are easy to fill that they will advertise. It's much better for industry to keep their knowledge intact. When the knowledge walks out the door, it's extremely difficult for them to replace. Does that make sense to people about how you can manage that process of, one, meeting the students' needs because they really love going to the classes? Often it's a time for them also to interact with their workmates, which they often maybe don't get a lot of time in the workplace to do. So, the judgment. Paid work, unpaid work, study, life and other experiences. They're really generic terms that have been used for recognition for as long as we've known. So how do you validate life skills? What is a life skill? Being able to walk and talk? What is a life skill? How would you know what the life skill was of the learner? Listen to the story. Unpaid work has as much value as unpaid work. It has much rigour and has much validation. And of course, study. Some learners will say, well, I didn't finish the qual, or I didn't finish the qualification, but I undertook this learning. That's fine, but it's not competency, because you're only testing knowledge. So you just need to be careful of that. Sometimes I say to learners, that's a beautiful thing, now I want to see you do it. And that means about leaving and being able to organise to assess in a workplace. And that's another challenge we have, because we're not used to leaving and jumping into our car and driving to industry. And some of us are, because that's all we do, but some of us aren't. How are you going to manage that process? Maybe within the TAFE system we will have people that will just do that and go and do workplace observation. That's a system change that will need to be thought about. Okay, let's go back to the portfolio, because I need to stress here, and I don't want to do it cruelly, so I have to think about my words here. Say to a learner, oh yes, you can apply for recognition, here you go. And they get, you know, 20 pieces of yellow paper with no idea of what this evidence looks like. Oh, you need to do a portfolio. What does a portfolio look like? Oh, you know, one of those things with plastic sleeves. Right, one of those. So what do I put in those? Oh, all your evidence. Right. Right, what does that look like? I just go to the back here, here's what it says here, yep. So what are we collecting? A piece of paper? For what? Every piece of evidence? Every element? No. Elements can be combined. Units can be combined. There's no rule that says, and tell me where it's written, there is no rule that says you must collect a piece of paper for each piece of evidence, for each element and every performance criteria. That is why recognition is cumbersome. That is why it is painful. Because you spend your days looking through War and Peace. Elements can be combined, units can be combined. One piece of evidence can be used 20 times if it meets the requirements. Just for an operational plan, someone who's put an operational plan together, I will tell you now, will have met most of the compulsory units of frontline. Because in that operational plan, they have had to communicate, they've had to problem solve, they've had to risk assess, they've had to look at OH&S, they've had to work in a team, and they've produced a document that says, this is what I've done. So what would be the problem? Hello. Beautiful. So what do I need to go with that operational plan? I need a third party report. I need their supervisor to say to me, yes, they've done all of this. Can I get that verbally? Yeah. Would I like them to sign something? Yeah, I think I would. Because I don't know whether they're mates or I don't know whether... I need to check that. But in saying that, let me just say something really. Learners don't lie. Most learners underestimate their own ability. How many times have you heard a learner say to you, oh no, I can't do that or I don't do that? I look at it and I go, well, yeah, actually, you do it. You have done it. So learners don't lie on the whole. There might be some instances where they do, but overall, let's just take the big picture here. They don't set out to lie, so we should not set out to catch them out. Recognition is not about catching a learner out. It is not about punishing them and making them produce, as I said, portfolio after portfolio. Portfolio is a nice way to collect evidence, but it is not the only way. Interview, questioning of underpinning knowledge, which is found in the units, listening to their story, third-party feedback, their performance review and their job role. You're there. Now, is that rigorous enough? Come on, you're all sitting there. Come on, fire at me. Is it rigorous enough?
What about the different forms of evidence?
The range statement is not compulsory. The range statement is there to be added to or taken away. The only absolute compulsory parts of the unit are the essential knowledge, the skills and the critical aspects of assessment.
Yeah, but, I mean,
Three. You should look at, across a range of units, three types of assessment methodology. One of those should be speaking, the questioning. You can't do that. You can't give recognition without asking those questions. Tell me what you do. Tell me how you do it. Tell me, would you have done it differently next time? We want to know that a learner can reflect on their own learning experience. Those questions are easily developed from the essential knowledge. They are easily turned into questions. So I've got questioning, I've got an interview, I've got workplace documentation, I've got third-party feedback. Is that enough? Yep, it is. So the million-dollar question, what do I do with the gaps? I've got a person here that's got a gap. How can I teach that gap? I can't run a class for one person. Can't run a class for six. Not cost-effective. Yes. Or else give them more time in the job. Get them exposed to that the gap area. Get them to buddy up with someone. Get them to be coached within the workplace. And that's the workplace's job. Let's not take industry out of the equation here that they don't have a level of responsibility to address the gap also. I've had learners come to me saying, you know, I want recognition, I look, and there are major gaps because they don't supervise anyone. So they're never going to get there. Unless they do the learning and unless they have the ability to supervise someone, whether that's in a role play, if that's a number of ways that they can get that experience. So sometimes the answer is a not. That's going to happen. Not everyone is going to get everything they want. And also industry has has an obligation to be able to expose that person. We often say to learners to maybe go and do some volunteer work if that's where they're going to get the exposure and they're not going to get it in their own workplace. Some learners want to see change. They want to go somewhere else. Well, how are they going to get that experience? We have to be a bit innovative about how, rather than thinking that the chalk and board is the only way they're going to get the learning, because it's not. You know yourselves. You all learn in different ways. You've all gathered an immense amount of knowledge. You haven't learned that in a classroom. You've learned it off each other, you've learned it through PD, you've learned it through life. So we get back to that big question, life experiences. Someone comes to me and says that they want to get recognition for childcare cert 3 because they've brought up a family and they've minded kids and their mum said they're good with kids anyway. No. I have to tell you, there are some areas that are tough to get recognition for. Children's services is one of them. The amount of knowledge that's required at a Cert 3 level is enormous, much higher than any other Certificate 3 in any other training package. So, to me, unless they're working in the field, that would be a not. The same with aged care. You have to be working in the field. You can't... I suppose you can, but when you look at a job role, often a job role doesn't describe adequately what the clients are like. So, you know, they're not getting spat at and kicked, and working with clients who have dementia, what does that look like? Working with challenging behaviours, what does that look like? What's the risk involved? Those things have to be experienced. Can't get that competency. You can have the knowledge, but competency isn't just the knowledge, as you know. So what about in-house training? Do we count that? Yes. Do we look at it and say, have you been assessed? Yes. Now, the in-house training might meet the requirements of the underpinning knowledge, but they may not have been assessed. So we go back to their third party. We go back to their supervisor. So have they taken this training and are they applying it in their job? If the answer's no, then you can't count it. I mean, you can be as tough on the evidence as you are required to be within the grounds of fairness. And often we ask for much more than is required. Observation. So this is my little thing about portfolios. I hate them. Literally, because I think it does conjure up in your head with this folder with loose leaf plastic in it that something's got to go in it. And it doesn't. You can have video, you can have... I'll tell you now, Aboriginal health workers across Australia hardly fill in a form or a report. All of their work is done by video, by telephone, by recording. One of the reasons for that is that we have a literacy issue, but secondly, they're not in, they're too busy doing the job. Yes. Yep. And that's a fantastic way to do it. We need to be careful about how much evidence we have to keep. I've known teachers to say that they keep everything. All right? For compliance, you need to show, you need to have an evidence form that shows what have you used and how has it been validated. We keep job roles, we keep performance reviews. We may keep a sample project or an outline of a project that we use to gap fill. That's all.
What about interviews and things? Do they need to be recorded?
No, you can take notes. Like, you can just take notes, remembering that those notes are able to be seen by the learner. So if you're taking dot points and you're saying, well, okay, you might take notes to say, well, I'm going to put this together to work out the evidence and work out your gaps. Now, that plan you would keep. The notes, no. All you need to do is record that you held an interview on such and such a date at what it. That can easily be validated. We suggest to RTOs that they have a form that the learner signs to say that they've attended a recognition interview. Or have some way on your paperwork that the learner can say that they attended and they were happy with the outcome or whatever. But I would suggest that you do keep something. But recording, webcam, all of those things are probably easier and much less time consuming than going through the plastic folder that you don't know what you're looking for. How do you know what you're looking for? It's a mess. The learner doesn't need to know the competencies. All they need to know is, what is it I need to prove here? So am I able to communicate effectively? What does effectively look like? It's a hard thing. You need to phrase some questions around their communication skills. Now, often what we do is develop up all of the questions to do with essential knowledge, and we say to the assessor, you may not need to use two of these or four of these, but we have them all there for you to look at. So you can make a decision, I need to ask this question. Or use a scenario, the what if. Making sense?
Is the audit process appreciative of this approach?
Yep. Now, I had a discussion outside before, and I do need to share it with you, that not all auditors are terrific. Actually, there are a few of them. There is an issue with auditors auditing against training packages and qualifications with no experience, or else with a view that relies on paper. Now, they also have been called to task through the COAG report. So, and currently we are trying to put some state forums together for auditors to actually understand what is evidence. So some auditors will want to have everything, other auditors won't. There is no consistency. That's probably not their fault either. It's just the way things have happened. TAFE, I believe, on my experience, was audited down to the last dot compared to how other RTOs were audited. There was a substantial difference. Now, some of that has to do with public purse money and the fact that some of these RTOs were not getting public purse money, but some of it was, let's try and catch them out, let's just... So some of it was about that too. Some of it was that the paper trails weren't in the most perfect order as they would have liked them. Again, auditors are given a job and we can't... You know, we need a quality system and we need an auditing process that says that you are compliant. I think that with the COAG report that will lighten up a little bit around recognition and also against the AQTF, because there will be some new quality standards arriving on your desk in November. I won't say any more. Okay, assessment of current knowledge, questioning. Third-party reports, supervisors. Would you get a report from a client? Could you use a report from a client? Absolutely. Could you use a report from a colleague? Ooh. Yes, no? Again, that would be an individual decision. If you thought, remembering, you don't have to accept every piece of evidence. You can discard evidence if you think that it's dodgy. If you think it's a bit... So that's why having three types is often good, because you have the ability then, if you've got more than that, to disregard. Personally, I don't accept feedback from colleagues. I think there are too many hidden agendas in the workplace that you don't know about and you're not privy to, and I think it's a bit of a risk. Unless they are supervising that person, yes, I would take that, but I think it's too emotive. And I also think that what if they gave you feedback that wasn't good? Do you share that with the learner and create holy hell in the workplace? No. So I steer away. I think you've got chances to get absolutely substantial evidence from elsewhere.
Some of the third-party reporting has been an issue, particularly with employers who will have biased opinion. You know, they want their employee to get their license, for example. So, you know, there has to be some, you know, that furthering of that evidence there to support that third-party reporting. And so you're interviewing and then your third party is saying there are two forms of evidence. But
no, I said three. You've got to be able to, if you're assessing against a licence or a...
Yes, you've got to have at least two.
Yeah, and you have to ask questions. You couldn't, even if a third party, the third party gave me a feedback and said this learner is fantastic, I would not be using that.
Yeah. The candidate is displaying or demonstrating.
Yep.
What I'm saying is that two forms of evidence are slightly questionable. That you're just interviewing.
I said three. I said you have to use three.
What I'm saying is what is your third form?
What is your third form? Can be a variety. It can be observation.
Yeah,
it
well,
can.
That's
but you're not. You don't have to see. You don't have to see it. You don't always have to use observation as an assessment tool.
No, but if we have, for example, if we have a portfolio of evidence.
Yeah.
We have something that is demonstrably aligned to the sorts of skill space that we're actually assessing against. That can play a pivotal role in the source of primary evidence, which would then be substantiated by your third-party reports and your interview.
But what is in that portfolio? I just challenge you a little bit here. What's in it?
Well, because that demonstrates their participation in their job.
How?
Because they have supplied evidence that demonstrates what they actually have done.
They've produced a document or some form of evidence that says this is what I've done. It doesn't test skill. All it does is say, I've got this operational plan that I've done. Okay?
Well, talking operational plan, let's say I participated in assessment validation, for example.
Yeah.
Developed an assessment tool.
Yeah.
You've seen that tool has been developed by that person within that portfolio.
Yeah.
I can interview someone and they can tell me that they've developed a tool, but that doesn't mean to say that...
It depends on what the evidence requires.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that I think we have to be very careful that we don't rule out portfolios of evidence, for example, because they can substantially demonstrate. Now, I understand your Cert 2 and Cert 3 are obviously slightly different qualifications basis where someone is coming from a different level of understanding.
Yep.
and skills. And it's far easier to pick another form of evidence. And indeed, a portfolio might be just way out of the league anyway for them to actually put it together. But, you know, I think we've got to be very careful.
I'm not saying rule out portfolios, but I think that you can't think in the past, let's be fair, portfolios has been a way for learners to apply for recognition. It's been a tool that has been used. What I'm saying is that yes, it has its value, and I appreciate what you're saying, that yes, it does prove a lot, but it doesn't prove everything. You know, and you need to have and portfolios sometimes are out of a learner's league. They are out of a learner's league. And often you can't have a piece of paper that proves your competency. You know, a piece of paper proves that you can do it, maybe, does it? Because you haven't seen it. So paper-based evidence is not the only way. Yes, you need some basics. You need job roles and performance reviews. But I just think in the past... and again, I appreciate what you're saying. I'm not disagreeing with you. But I think we need to also move from just thinking that a portfolio is the only way we do recognition. Well, I'll let you have your view. I'm not going to challenge you. What I would say is that, and this again, I did not write this. This is in here, in the Bible, where it states, an assessor rarely evaluates evidence against individual elements and performance criteria. Using your expertise, you need to look at evidence in a holistic way. You need to look at it the way it happens in the job. You know, when you look at qualifications within training packages, that's not how the job happens. It's just the way it's set out. So you have to understand what are the most important things that a person does in this job. And I would just state that when I look at recognition, the first thing I look at is what is the risk if I get this wrong? What is the high risk area of this person's job role? And just say they are going for a license to drive a forklift, then I need to be really, really convinced that the evidence before me meets the evidence of the units. It also needs to meet the evidence of the workplace. When we say that a learner has to follow or participate, other words around working, in following the organisation's policies and procedures, those policies and procedures may not be spelled out in units of competency. They may not be spelled out in areas of confidentiality. Most of them are, but there are some areas within the competencies that don't even go anywhere near what industry wants. So in order for you to deem someone competent, you need to take into account the other things that are required, and that might be about attitudes and ethics. How do you assess ethics? Next year you're going to be asked to assess employability skills. What does that look like? So the challenges are, it's going to be hard enough for you to take all of those things. So when you're looking at recognition, you need to find some simple tools and some simple ways of looking at a job role and being able to map it. And maybe we follow on from here about workshops about how do you map job roles, because that's a skill. And you need to do it holistically. When we design recognition assessment tools, we map those units to the job role and we cluster them. So any units to do with the organisational structure will be around the compulsory or core underpinning knowledge of the learners. The specialist skills are usually the electives. Yep.
Can you just shed some light on previous qualifications and the mapping process?
Okay. I'm glad you brought that up, because I know that Howard spoke this morning about context. If someone comes with a statement of attainment, you are bound under the AQTF to accept that under mutual recognition. You do not have the luxury of saying, sorry, it doesn't fit what I want. You have to accept it. But in saying that, there are ways when you are doing the mapping to develop up a range of questions. Because if someone did, I'll just give you an example. If someone undertook the Certificate 3 in Children's Services and did the Occupational Health and Safety provide... It's the direct care, it's the OH&S unit, provide... Oh, I've got a blank. Anyway, let's just go with... It's about direct care. Now, they've had a sea change and they want to go and work in aged care. And they're going to be providing support in direct care, occupational health and safety support in direct care. The knowledge component is the same, except the context is different. because in children's services I don't have to lug around someone who can't walk. I mean, I'm not allowed to carry a baby anyway, so I already know that. Within my service, I'm not walking around with a child on my hip. I'm not going to be helping someone get out of the shower. So the context of the occupational health and safety unit, even though it's the same and it has the same code, is different. So therefore, if someone comes to me and says, I want recognition for that, I go, okay. But I'll tell you what, I have a whole set of other little things in there about testing knowledge and about telling me, how would you do this? And they might say to me, oh, look, I don't know. There's a whole unit there on personal care. So we would make sure that the occupational, because it's in there anyway, it's the whole lot of knowledge is doubled up, because when they were first written, they were written as distinct competencies. Now, you know in a job role that you do more than one thing at once. That you don't have a job role that says I do this, then I do that. When I'm operating the photocopying machine, yeah, I know the technology. When it breaks, I kick it. I know where to put the paper. I know the number. I problem solve. I do a whole range of other things that make me competent, not just being able to use a photocopier machine. So the same with occupational health and safety. I am very wary. It's the only unit that I find that I have to develop up other things to support that learner being able to get that added context of the job role. Look, I would say anything before training packages, and I'll tell you why. Most industries have undertaken substantial changes in the last 6 years. So even if you look at someone who undertook a qualification in 98, it's too old. The job has changed. What you've got to think about here, the job has dramatically changed. Some of those core areas of the job role might be around communication, and you think, oh, yeah, okay, except that there may have been legislation, there may have been standards. If you look at aged care, it was a medical model, okay? Disabilities was a medical model. We're now moving to a client-driven model. Anyone that did an aged care certificate 6 years ago is out of date. Legislation has come in, regulations have come in. So we say, we, Industry Skills Council, say that you need to look at it to see if a job has changed dramatically within 2 years. Usually it's 2 to 3 years. There will be some massive changes. Technology, just think about years ago, you didn't use a computer, you didn't send email. We've now got, you know, home and community care workers using Palm Pilots. That's a technology that's not even in our training package. We tell them. We say we have to accept that, but what you have to know is that you're unemployable. You know, you need to have these skills to be able to do this in the job. How are you going to get there? So we say, let's do a work placement. Because personal care, they have to be able to do that. Manual handling, that has to be observed in the workplace. Be able to use a hoist machine. Unless an RTO is set up with all of that equipment, you would be saying, I need to be able to see that you can use this. Most learners they don't say, oh, no, forget it. They don't. They recognise that, yes, they have that competency, but the context is different, the job role is different. And I think for us as teachers, we have to keep going back to the job role. Forget the curriculum. You have to go back to the job role and say, what does the job role require? And your job role is your qualification. What is required? What is the knowledge? What is the skills? And no more than that. Yep.
Just an extension on that. I understand what you're saying in to get the curriculum.
Oh, I didn't mean it like that. I didn't mean it like that.
But sometimes we get people who are coming in to say the diploma,
yep,
the recognition. And our curriculum more and more is saying the prerequisite, say, Cert 3.
Yep.
But they've come with a whole range of experiences that maybe, in one case, may have done their Cert 3 so long ago. But you kind of wonder, their RPL, all the things we're talking about, looking at the job, at the diploma level is going well, but in the back of your mind you think, becomes as a prerequisite to three.
Have they got that knowledge?
If I get them RPL for the diploma, does that imply that the Cert 3 is also ticked? That's one question. And my second question is about for those people who come in at the diploma and have their skills at the management operation level, but they haven't got, they weren't in the industry at the education level. Do we give recognition for the diploma, recognising that they didn't, that participation didn't occur within their industry because they've come in from different areas and so forth?
If it's
that type of thing, I'm interested.
Again, I think we need to go back to that individual level of saying, well, okay, if it was a prerequisite and they did it so long ago, I'd be having some scenarios, I'd be having some questions there, I would be questioning about occupational health and safety for a start. I'd also be questioning about their leaders, their knowledge. Often learners will say, I do this in my job, and I go, beautiful, now tell me why. I haven't got a clue. Because I never got the knowledge. They've done it, and because somebody said that's how you do it, or they just automatically have that ability to do it, but they don't often understand why they do it. So what we say is, look, the gap is that your skill level is fantastic. The knowledge level, and they will agree and say, well, no, I've never learnt about Paget, I never learnt about, and I'm talking about children's services here. So you put together a learning plan that allows them to go and do some research about developmental theorists to understand how we've got to where we are today. That is not unfair. And what that does is give you a plan. You know where the gaps are. The learner has the ability to go off without having to come to a class two nights a week. Now, the learner might say, well, will it be any benefit if I come to class? At the end of the day, that has to be the learner's choice, and you could say, well, look, we are going to cover these things off. It's up to you. You don't have to come, but it might be beneficial to maybe sit in on a couple of these to get a feeling about where this knowledge comes from. Most learners will say, okay. They're not that assertive. They get put off by the amount of paperwork, so they're not usually gung-ho. We can see 1%, 3%. We don't have them knocking on our door here. So I think the supportive way to say is that the industry has changed. What can you tell me about how your industry has changed in the last 5 years? If you get the blank look, you know, often that's a hard question. You might go and get, that's their research project. Go off and tell me how it's changed. How has legislation altered the way that you work with clients? Because if they're still there from a medical model or from a model that's outdated and the Cert 3 was the prerequisite, you have every right. Don't forget you are making the judgment and you need to be able to put your hand on your heart and say they're there. If they're not, they're not. And it's hard to give partial recognition. You don't give partial recognition for a unit. But you may give them the ability to go and learn the knowledge because you accept that they have the skills. Does that make sense? How am I going? Okay, we already decided this typical workplace activities and how they relate to the recognition. I think the application needs to be much more simpler than what we currently have. You need to know what the job looks like, even if you've not done that job. You need to have a strategic way of looking at the evidence across abroad, not drilling down to this performance criteria, which is not required under recognition. Look at clustering those units because you'll see that the same evidence is in the units, essential knowledge. Often that knowledge is the same all the way through. Make sure that you look at the evidence and look at the position description and make sure it aligns. Remember, qualifications are being developed as generic. So you will need to do some customisation. You'll need to understand what are the other things that they do in the job. The other thing is that some performance reviews are really poor. They're not put together that well. Often as added value, we say to industry, use the competencies. And more industry is using the competencies contained within the qualifications as part of their performance reviews. So disabilities is doing it now, aged care, all of them are using those competencies because they are the standard. And remember, this is industry standard. It isn't our standard, it's industry that's saying this is the benchmark. Broad range of skills. It's a different way of looking at it. Probably totally different to what you've done before. Technically competent? Buddy up with a workplace supervisor if you're not. Often you're able to assess the more generic competencies, but the specialist skill areas someone else will need to look at. So if you have a team of assessors, you'll get that expertise because you'll have it. Look at evidence for more current competence rather than historical dates. So my view is look for stuff that's more current. And also, when you're talking about competency, when does competency run out? Does it run out? What happens when you get your driver's license? If you don't drive, what happens? Are you still as good as the day that you got your driver's license? Okay, I'll give you an example. You get your driver's license and you park the car in the garage and you don't pull it out for a year. You leave it in that garage. And then at the end of 12 months you think, I'll drive the car out today. Tell me, are you competent? No. Why not? Because you have it, if you don't use it, you lose it. Okay, that's the view. Competency, you need to see that a learner has demonstrated competence at least in the last 12 to 18 months. Anything longer than that, if someone's come from a job role that they did 4 years ago, again, some of the generic stuff, maybe.
While you may have the older qualification, if you can demonstrate that you have maintained the competency and grown,
yes,
and developed,
yes, you're there, tick. So you need to demonstrate that you have maintained that competency and that you've grown and that you've moved up.
Some industries cover it in professional development points and those sorts of things.
And accountants do that. They all have to gather a number of points each year.
Yeah.
But other industries don't. So that's where you need to just keep that measure of 2 years in your head that I need to have done something. Performance reviews by supervisors. Workplace documents that don't actually need to be a document. It can be the intranet. It can be, you can cite in the workplace. Products and processes. A process often won't be a document, but they may, let's just say, contribute to occupational health and safety. I'll use that one again. Contribute to occupational health and safety. Someone said to me, oh my God, you know, I don't do that. And I go, do you turn up at team meetings? Fill out incident reports? Do you do a risk assessment? Have you ever let your supervisor know that there was a problem with the PowerPoint? Yep. Contribute. Not asking that. It's the way we also unpack words. Contribute to occupational health and safety sometimes can look enormous. But in actual fact, it's not. It's about whether they've attended occupational health and safety meetings. Are there minutes from that meeting? Can their supervisor verify that fact? Have they ever put in an incident report about a problem? That's contributing. Have they said to their supervisor there's a problem with that chair? That's contributing. So let's not try to make it as big sometimes as we do. Try and look at what the words mean in relation and context to that job role. And again, I'm going back to the job role again. Questioning. Why, how, when, and what if. The what if is a good one. So what if you did this differently? Would you have done this the same way next time? Would you have done it differently? Why? Because we want to see that learning is ongoing, that they can reflect on their performance, using scenarios, questions that look at risk. So look at that job role and look at where is the biggest risk here. This is in your book, and I'm going to just go through it really quickly. Where is this thing? And then I'm finishing, because you must have... I want to go over time. But I think this is just a view of... of what we used to do and what we do differently now. Well, what we hope we're going to do differently now. This is in your book. This is just an example that I put in there just to show you. So here's the learner's job role, and they're a disability support worker. I'm not sure what page. Can anyone help us out with... Okay. Right, what are the competencies required of the job role? And you get this from the position description. Provide support at home with daily living tasks such as washing, dressing, eating, blah, blah. The learner, on the other side, the learner performs to the standards set by the workplace industry. The assessor is able to gather that workplace evidence, and that will be a performance review job role. The competencies contained within the job role are the same competencies that are contained within the qualification. And that was the competency. CCS 9A, provide support services to clients. So can you see how you've gone a full circle here? And I haven't seen a learning plan in there yet. Haven't seen a chalk, whiteboard, pen, teaching hours. What have I seen? Don't throw that cup at me. What else have I seen? Performance review, feedback from the supervisor. Am I going to be asking some questions? Absolutely. Will I have interviewed this learner? Absolutely. Now, I want to just show you this. This is the production line approach, or the conveyor line approach. And this is a traditional way of how we did learning. So the analysing of the job is done by industry skills councils, or before that it was done by whoever. So it leads to the development of a package or a program which consists of learning content, which leads to assessment activities, which generates a learning history, which may provide evidence of competency equating to the issue of a statement of attainment or a qualification. And this certifies that the learner has the skills and knowledge contained within the learning program, not within the job role. So we don't fill gaps. We start with a clean slate and we keep going. Okay, let's look at a continuous improvement model, which I hope is what we are going to look forward to in the future. The analysis of the job role leads to the definition of job competencies, which comprise knowledge and skills that can be learned by the analysis of a job, performance assessment, prior current experience, which should also provide evidence that the learner has the skills, knowledge and attitude necessary to successfully perform the job to the required industry standard. It also provides sufficient current, valid and authentic evidence of the learner's competency across a range of units or the whole qualification. And that's the model. And look, that model can be worked on, added to, but we need to start with looking at a continuous improvement. Rather than just have people on this conveyor belt that get on to do Cert 4 and then get off, we need to get them on at Cert 3, then move them up, upskill them, look at the knowledge gaps, make added value, which can be fee-for-service gives you another avenue. Industry will pay for training if they know that they need it. Often they don't know that they need it because they don't do any workforce planning future. Robin.
Tricia, I just really thought that you were responding to that and just make a broad comment that we did research with your skills council about recognition in aged care a few years ago, and from interviewing the prospective applicants, the common view was that they knew how to wash old people, but they didn't know why they had to.
That's right.
The students reflected that was to say, we want the recognition of being given training time, because they said, while we can do the job, we've only been doing it for 10 years, we would like to have our status increased by being offered training by the employer. And that was often a tension, because the drive is get the recognition happening and make it fast and quick and simple and get people through.
Yep.
And not the aspect that you were talking about designing learning plans for gap training that are going to support the gaps that they really have.
Yep.
Because the other aspect of that research was that in aged care, while people can perform the tasks that they need to do to look after on a daily basis, the industry needs huge cultural change. And the only way the industry identifies that that happens is by better understanding of all the personal care workers. So it just reflects to me, listening to what you're saying, how important the relationship with the workplace is in actually negotiating what gap training can mean.
Yep.
And when you say often the industry doesn't know what it wants, there's plenty of aged care hospitals that don't want to spend any money on training. And we still have that problem, but it's then a sort of a value judgment about what the industry really needs in training for its staff. And so it just reflects to me how complex that is and how important it is for the teachers to have a really close connection with those workplaces.
Oh, absolutely, and I don't disagree with you about the industry, but the interesting thing that is hitting the industry now and in the future is their skill shortages. So they are not in a luxurious position anymore of saying, we've got so many workers, we don't offer training. Now if you look in the local papers, you'll see that a lot of aged care facilities are offering the role of personal care worker with the certificate 3 in aged care, or so they're holding some carrots out here, and plus the accreditation has also moved that along. But I agree with you that they often want a quick fix, and I would say that do not compromise who you are and what you do to meet that need. You need to be really clear that they are there or they are not there. And, you know, I was sort of thinking about, do you assess everything? 90% of the time, or 95% of the time, 90% of the time we are competent in our job roles. Sometimes we're not. I know I'm not. I can't use a bloody photocopier. It's as simple as that. So when you're weighing up the risks, don't sweat the small stuff. Only sweat the big stuff. You know, some of that little stuff, if it doesn't occur in their job every single day, then let it go. It's not, you know, it's not the BNN. It's got no risk associated with it, and they only do it very, very occasionally. Look at what the real job is and don't worry about those tiny little things. I'm finishing. Okay, just have a look at the continuous improvement model. The RTO is focusing primarily on recognition of existing job competencies. They're focusing on the business goal of the organisation. They are working closely with job supervisors to ensure that they are aligned. They are acknowledging existing work skills. They're assisting assessors in the workplace at the earliest time. They're looking at the learner, focusing on improving their work performance. Job roles are centre stage. and qualifications are viewed as an acknowledgement that the job is being performed to the required standard. It should be a reward. It says you are... Most people perform far above. Remember, these competencies are then written to the lowest common denominator. So most people perform much better than that anyway. Okay. So in closing, I want to just say don't disrespect the own work, the work that you do. Have self-confidence in your ability to look at the evidence and make an informed judgment. Don't get waylaid by thinking that you have to have a piece of paper every time. Form that relationship with the learners. Listen to the stories. Think of other ways to collect evidence, and remembering you can collect evidence holistically, not, you know. And I think this is the way forward. New partnerships between industry and VET, with industry's understanding that you know what the nature of work is. The broad skills that workers need, the benefits that this has for not only industry but for us, and looking at implementing holistic approaches together. You can't work in isolation from industry, but you have to be able to work in a way that meets the requirements of your master also, which is often attention. But I think that we have the will. I certainly know we have the talent. I certainly know we have the skills, and we should be getting a share of those dollars that are out there, not just for private RTOs who are cleaning up in that field presently. Any other questions? Anyone want to shoot me? Belt me? Hit me?
You're probably going to get shot more often by the teachers.
I'm at the Western Institute in Wellington, I think, or Orange next month. But I had 80 of their people at a forum who, and seriously, they told me to wear armour. And they have moved hugely. So I just think it's fear also. I think it's fear of the unknown. I think it's fear, you know, when you get pushed to do something, you have resistance. I think that's what's happening with the government pushing. You know, it's coming down from on top, and people are already thinking, God, this is something else I have to do. I think it's about taking the fear out of that and looking at a way that will release you. The other thing I want to just say before I finish, assignments only test knowledge. I'm going to leave it at that. Yes.
But what I think is going to be an easy is the new condition to be consistent. Mm-hmm. What's your take on that? There's two new definitions after what I'm asking today, and I don't think after all.
Neither of them are accurate. And, you know, we've had given feedback. People have a different view. I think if we just take away it all and we say, what are we trying to do here? We are trying to validate. Just think about validate someone's existing skills and knowledge in a workplace. I know. It's the same as being able to put a mark on it. It's the other issue of putting a grade. And I don't want to go there either, because what does it say? Highly, what? I think they are difficulties and challenges that I don't have an answer for. I'm happy to say I know it, but I'm happy to also say I don't know it. I don't know. I don't know how that box system will... Oh, absolutely. We say get rid of it. Don't have it. And given that the mandate is about recognising existing skills and knowledge, and this is coming down not from this is coming down from government, and they want a simpler process, and yet we now have another system that creates another issue. Oh, I have no idea. I have no idea. But you
say it also strikes me that we are talking here about assessment as being the principal skills that our staff need, and they see themselves as teachers. So the shift to become assessment oriented up front, I think, is the
But aren't they already assessing? Sorry.
They're assessing, but they're not assessing in this. With these methodologies, they're assessing with often assessment tools that are provided to them, often with, this is what you'll do, and it will be a sit down test. And so they're not looking at the student up the front and recognising existing skills. That's an assessment task, that's not a delivery issue. So the assessment has become the main focus of what they're doing.
The assessment's become the main focus purely because the AQF and the government is saying that you have to be able to recognise up front, and that's where you all assess, and you assess every day, regardless of what sort of methodology you use, you assess. Whether that's by assignment, by group work, by presentations, you are making some judgments on a learner's competency.
I believe the teachers see themselves as deliverers of knowledge.
And that's supported by the table that you've got here. I think, you know, what Janet's saying is that that's the traditional approach.
It is the traditional, and we're asking you to move from there, and which will be a challenge. I'm not saying it won't be, and I think it will take...
I think if we recognise,
yep.
We're talking about...
Yeah, it's a challenge.
We want to
yeah.
It is all about coming from a different frame.
It is. It is. And I, you know, as I said, I think it'll be a challenge, but I think you have the ability to do it.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, thank you very much.